One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
Well, who would have thought it that the pandemic would have actually resulted in people possibly overworking and actually giving up 4 days of annual leave? Certainly in the last year, this amounts to over 124 million missed days as a nation, because nearly half of working adults are working additional hours during the pandemic. Is this a good thing? Is this a useful, viable way of actually maintaining our work-life balance? Well, we're going to ask ACE psychologists to talk about that and indeed sort of address some of the key things with respect to the mental health of ensuring that we take our holidays and our vacations. And of course, we obviously are delighted to welcome to the programme Dr. Sarah Vora. How are you, Sarah?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolute delight. Now, this particular survey, which, again, I think it is interesting. I mean, it kind of flies in the face of one or two things, which people say, oh, you've got to get back to work, because if you're not in work, if we don't see you there, then obviously you're not working, etc. There is a sort of notion that, you know, we might start earlier, there's not a kind of finishing time, etc. We don't have the commuting side of things to actually work through. So it actually does sort of work through the premise of, does it? Or is it a case of no, as a psychologist, you are not as surprised whatsoever by the findings of this particular survey?
So to be honest, I really wanted to get involved with the Rail Industries Life Back on Track campaign, because I think it really highlights the point that I experienced personally. I know that I've struggled to take annual leave myself this year for that very reason, because the boundaries between our work and our downtime have become incredibly blurred. We're working from home. There's this always on culture that we feel that we have to be always visible, always contactable, always reachable. And I think the other thing that is added to that is that because of restrictions, we've been limited in terms of where we can go. So I think there's this idea that actually, if there's nowhere to go, I may as well continue working. And a startling stat is that a third of Brits are yet to take any annual leave this year, and a quarter of them actually cited it's because they're waiting for UK restrictions to lift before they book any leave. And you may ask, what's the problem? Well, the problem is that actually more than 40% are experiencing burnout as a result of this. And so it's really, really important that we kind of continue with our habits that we had pre-COVID in terms of taking regular breaks and ensuring that we're not working ourselves to the ground.
Well, again, you alert us to that fact, which is very important. We've been joined absolutely at a perfect time from the Rail Delivery Group by the wonderful Seb Gordon. How are you, Seb?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Absolute joy. Now, in terms of what we've just been sharing, that finding, again, from your own point of view, has there been a tendency to actually say, yeah, okay, I can get an extra hour here, get an extra hour in there, and suddenly you find yourself, well, there's 168 hours in the week, you only need kind of a third of those for sleeping, so let's just work through them.
Well, I think lots of people will recognise what Sarah's just been saying. You know, personally, I've been working from home, and you start a little bit late earlier, you carry on a little bit later at the end of the day, and it all over time, it all adds up. And our survey has found that really the nation is at something of a tipping point. We all need a break, and you know, as you'd expect from the rail industry, we think that there's no better way to get that break than to hop on the train, because obviously, you know, the train is a nice relaxing way to travel. You don't have to worry about parking, you don't have to worry about traffic jams and getting the kids all packed up and in the car. You can hop on the train and have a bit of me time, read a book, watch a box set if you've got a tablet, and you know, we'll whisk you off to your day out in luxury, maybe, and you know, relaxation.
Sarah, recent data published by the World Health Organization suggests that working more than 55 hours a week can also lead to an increased chance of dying from heart disease and stroke. So this, again, we talk about burnout, but this is something which is actually quite serious and potentially very detrimental on our health and well-being.
Absolutely. I think it's important to address not only the mental health benefits, but also the physical health impact that not taking regular breaks can have. And I think there's often this notion that if we take a break, we're perceived to be slacking or not dedicated enough. But actually, a break doesn't have to be weeks of annual leave. It can be as simple as that day trip. I mean, I took my own advice and I had an annual leave day yesterday with my daughter, went down to London, went to go and meet my sister, her partner and her little boy. And, you know, an hour and a half on the train, my daughter was really content with her iPad. I was really content listening to my audiobook with actually relishing a hot cup of tea, which I rarely have at the moment. And actually, it was brilliant because we got some fresh air. It allowed us to make the use of the green spaces. It allowed me to connect with family and friends. And actually, I thought, well, was that really that onerous? It wasn't. And actually, as a result, I feel incredibly rejuvenated. I feel more focused on being able to carry out with work. And actually, that was probably the jolt that I needed. And so it's something that I'd really recommend that people make use of, is to stop seeing annual leave as having to be days on end. But actually, that simple day is probably more than enough.
As we said, we're talking about the Get Life Back on Track, or Life Is Back on Track, which is very positive from that point of view. I mean, Seb, when the idea for this campaign was put together, did you feel that actually those day trips, which used to be such a kind of standard part of most of our lives, etc., had kind of been lost over the last 15 to 16 months?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, in the rail industry, we've seen our passenger numbers decline drastically as a result of the pandemic. And that includes both sort of your Monday to Friday commuters and leisure passengers. Actually, we are seeing leisure passengers returning, particularly at the weekends. People still, even if they're working from home, want to get out and have a bit of fun at the weekends, particularly. But as Sarah was saying, it's really important for people to take a little break during the midweek. It is something that I think as Brits, we worry about. We want to be present at the desk to impress our bosses and what have you. And actually, you know, on the odd occasions when I've done it, there's nothing better than having a cheeky day off in the middle of the week, you know, getting away from it and coming back, and you come back really rejuvenated. You've had a change of scenery. You've got away from the same desk that you sit at from, you know, from 9 to 5 every day. If you're lucky, it's only 9 to 5. And you know, you've got a different perspective on life, and you've had a bit of a break, and it's great. You come back refreshed, renewed, and in some ways more productive than if you just stayed and had another day at the desk.
Sarah, we were talking recently to the Chief Executive Officer of York Maze, Tom Piercy, who's saying that actually following the advice of our current government is a bit like guess the length of a piece of string. We just don't know what's happening in terms of that. And the important point is it actually deals with people's confidence. How, from the psychological point of view, important is it that people do have confidence in the fact that, well, I'd love to take a rail trip, but I'm not sure whether I have to have a mask, not wear the mask. You know, what's going on with respect to that?
So one of the things that I always encourage people to do is when they think about worry, or when they experience a worry, such as what you've just given as an example of, do I wear a mask? Do I do this? Do I do that? Is think, can I turn this worry into a problem that I can solve? So actually, with the very example that you've given, you can turn that into a problem you can solve by firing up the rail industry website and to look at what the precautions are in terms of advice, and to, rather than ruminate on it, simply turn it into a problem that you can solve. Because I think often we can consume a lot of time and energy worrying about things that actually we can simply solve by looking up what the latest restrictions and advice is, and avoid it consuming our time and energy and inevitably getting in the way of something that could be quite a positive experience.
And Seb, again, obviously rail interconnects so much of the country and so on, but there is obviously that concern between, are you a mask wearer? Are you a mask hater? Where are you going to go with respect to that? Should we all have hazmat suits? There is concern about, obviously, that social element, which used to be very much part of the train experience.
That's right. I mean, what I would say is a few things. You know, generally, trains aren't as busy as they were. So, you know, if you used to experience busy trains, the chances are that they probably aren't at the moment. Going back to Sarah's point about what you can do, we've created a new app, so you can go on to Facebook Messenger and you can look up National Rail Inquiries and you can sign up for alerts about your journey, and they will tell you if your train is likely to be particularly busy. So that's something that you can do if you're a little bit concerned. People should rest assured that trains are generally very well ventilated. Either we've got on some of the older trains, the windows which are open. On the newer trains, we've got good air conditioning systems so that the air is regularly refreshed. So, you know, there's all of those reasons that people can travel with confidence. And also on the question of masks, we will be continuing to ask and expect actually people to wear masks if their train is busy.
And moving on from there, of course, there is, of course, a wonderful incentive here because it's the Golden Ticket campaign that actually sort of slots into the Life is Back on Track campaign, which effectively, would you like to share with us, Seb, what this Golden Ticket giveaway actually entails?
Sure. So obviously, we've been talking today about encouraging people to seize a day and get out for a cheeky day away from the home office, and to sort of kickstart that and encourage people to really to do that. We're going to give away 12 golden tickets. You can go to nationalrail.co.uk/golden ticket from Monday. You can nominate someone who you think deserves a year's worth of free travel. So it's an absolutely fantastic prize, a whole year's worth of free travel, so that you can, you know, we're practicing what we preach. We're going to let 12 lucky people get out and enjoy a whole year's worth of free travel so that they can seize those days of fun and get back to doing the things that they enjoy and taking the train to do them.
Love the way you say cheeky day away from the home office. There are people who say politicians have been taking cheeky days away from the home office for quite some time, but we're talking about obviously office work at home from that point of view. It's important. Sarah, if somebody actually gave you the chance, you mentioned London, where would you actually choose to go? Where would your ideal railway train vacation be? Would it be Devon, Cornwall? Would it be up to Scotland? Where would you suggest?
I would suggest anywhere with where green spaces. So my advice in terms of taking that break is as simple as ABC. So A is air. So pick somewhere where you've got access to green spaces. Green spaces have been shown to alleviate stress. But not only that, exposing yourself to that natural daylight can help reset your body's natural sleep-wake cycles, which helps improve your sleep, your mood, even regulate your appetite. B is book it in. So if you have this hypothetical idea that I will get round to that, we know that that's not going to happen. Actually make it, putting pen to paper, booking those train tickets and committing it to it makes you more likely to follow it through. And finally, C is connect with others. So use it as an opportunity to connect with those around you. Maybe suggest a midway meet point if you've got friends scattered around the country. But actually we know that enduring times of stress, the people that we surround ourselves with can help us make sense of that stress, also lift our mood, motivate us. So ABC.
Absolutely. Just as easy as. Seb, finally, just a quick reminder, where can people go to find out further details about the Rail Delivery Group and this possible competition for winning a golden ticket?
So people should go to nationalrail.co.uk/golden ticket from Monday to enter the competition. And as Sarah says, if they're looking for advice on how to travel by train, what they might need to do, they should also visit nationalrail.co.uk and find all the advice that they need there.
Seb Gordon from the Rail Delivery Group and ace psychiatrist and mental health expert, Dr. Sarah Vora. Many thanks indeed and happy travelling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Fast Futures. You may not have heard of the concept, but certainly as the National Health Service proceeds into its 74th year, it is one of those critical aspects that is being used to effectively provide a future for the NHS with, of course, Health Education England and its partner NHS bodies, including NHSX, being the founding partners of the aforementioned Fast Futures, a digital business skills and mentoring programme, which is continuing to grow from strength to strength. And we're delighted to actually welcome to the programme today a Fast Futures NHS mentee who's actually moved from the joys of Devon through to Birmingham. And it's the amazingly wonderful Grace Whittaker. How are you, Grace?
I'm great, thank you.
Excellent. So, Grace, share with us your own particular experience and why you decided to actually apply for this and obviously end up in Birmingham.
So, I applied for Fast Futures. I graduated last year from the University of Nottingham. Like many people following from COVID, it kind of put you in a little bit of uncharted territory. So I moved back home. I started working in a restaurant, which was far from ideal, to be honest. And I'm just looking for opportunities to, you know, kind of upskill myself, make myself as the best candidate I could possibly be for the upcoming job season. And it turned out to be absolutely amazing. I definitely recommend it. It was really, really thorough and really well-rounded. And I particularly, you know, my favourite aspect was definitely the mentoring. I was partnered with Ruth, who's Health Education England, and she was just amazing. We had a lot of sessions throughout the programme, and we've actually decided to keep the relationship going, which is amazing. Like I say, I start my first graduate job in about 2 weeks in Birmingham. So I will be on business transformation at National Express. So I'll be going into transport. And Ruth was definitely an amazing help in navigating me from graduation to securing the job.
Absolutely. One of the 96, I believe, directors have gone into the whole sort of area. And now we're also delighted to welcome to the programme now the programme director at Fast Futures, of course. That's Amy Caton. How are you, Amy?
Hi. Lovely to meet you, Alex. I'm very well, thank you.
Good to connect with you now. Grace has just shared with us her particular journey, which is very exciting and positive. Can you just give us some background in terms of what the whole essence of Fast Futures is? I mean, we've talked about it being the combination of basically a partnership that actually sort of really enhances people's sort of job creativity and experiences, etc. But what are the ways in which you're involved with this whole process?
So I have the pleasure of helping deliver the programme day to day, working with employers and the young people. And really, Fast Futures came about in response to COVID, but is here to stay because the issues around youth unemployment and the skills gaps that we see across industries across the UK are pretty pervasive. They're not going away anytime soon, so Fast Futures isn't either. And really what we want to do is help young people upskill with the types of skills that employers are looking for to complement their workforces today. So in a lot of times, I think in many cases, education doesn't necessarily prepare young people for that world of work. So we're really trying to fill that gap and bridge that gap as well between learning and earning.
As we said, Fast Futures, the Digital Business Skills and Mentoring Programme, which was launched, as you mentioned, as a social venture in response to COVID, which is working. I mean, we've just actually had the Prime Minister in the West Midlands talking about levelling up agendas and sorting things out from that point of view. Presumably, Fast Futures is a critical part of that, because Grace's story is a wonderful case of how actually, yep, graduated from the University of Nottingham. I know I'm mentioning it, even though I'm at the University of Lincoln, what the hey, we're all a part of the whole group. But, you know, is now actually sort of engaging in a very productive career pathway. Presumably that is a dream story with respect to your work with Fast Futures.
Absolutely. You know, we've seen lots of cases and stories like Grace's. And I think the other thing to flag as well is that about 65% of learners who have come onto our programme have said that actually it's changed their mind about the type of work that they might want to do as a result. And it's really broadened people's horizons and opened up lots more opportunities than they otherwise would have been aware of. And whether that is with one of our big employer partners like BT, AstraZeneca, Legal & General, whether it's with the NHS and the public sector, whether it's with smaller organisations that perhaps they haven't heard of before Fast Futures, but actually who are growing quite rapidly and therefore are looking to recruit and build their workforce as well. I think it's just a great opportunity to broaden people's horizons. So Grace, I'm not sure whether you would have ever thought you'd be going into the line of work that you are now if it hadn't have been for Fast Futures.
No, definitely not. And I think that's probably one of the take home messages that Ruth told me, is to sort of have an open mindset and, you know, don't think that you can't access certain industries, because I think like NHS is a great example. Because I think I was under the sort of misconception that it's very, you have to have a science degree to kind of enter the industry, but the Ruth sort of opened my eyes to how health education in England in particular, you know, there's so many opportunities for students, graduates, you know, individuals at the start of their career, which aren't healthcare focused. So whether that's, you know, HR, project management, I think Ruth mentioned finance. And that sort of mindset definitely helped me with, you know, my application process. Like I say, I'm actually entering the transport industry, which if you told me probably a year ago that I would be going into that industry, I would have thought you're a bit crazy. But, you know, it aligns with my goals really, really nicely. And I think it took Ruth and the programme to sort of open my eyes to that fact.
I've said over the last couple of decades to most of my students, it's not the degree, it's what you do with the degree that's actually important. And I can see elements within that coming across. I mean, Grace, just out of interest, what was your first degree at the University of Nottingham?
I did philosophy, politics and economics.
So the classic PPE
after the that classic, yeah.
Into transport. There are so many wonderful things with respect to that. Amy, people are listening to this are thinking, well, this sounds great. I never heard of Fast Futures before. And as we've said, Grace is one of the 96. Do you think that actually this is going to become much more embedded in terms of ways in which graduates in particular, but obviously students across the base can actually become engaged with processes? And is it a good way of actually addressing that challenge that we know is around with respect to us in terms of getting the right people for the right posts in the NHS?
Absolutely. Yeah, I really do hope that this is just going to grow and grow and give lots more people the opportunity to take those next steps, to explore options and to launch their careers. I think that, you know, first of all, it's totally free. So actually, why not give it a go? It's part-time, so it's something that people can juggle if they're still studying. They can balance that with their studies, part-time work, or perhaps if it's people who are graduating this summer, don't have plans yet, and they're you know, fully on the job hunt. This is a great thing to sign up to for September. It's very manageable. And so I think this is really something that will complement anything else that you are doing to round out your CV, get those experiences, and just give you that extra boost.
And just out of interest, why 96? Was that a deliberate target you were going for? Or did you think, no, we don't want 100 for the first one, let's go for 96? Or was it just how things panned out?
Just how things panned out. We never want to set an upper limit on anything. We'll always just be pushing for the strongest numbers we can.
So in terms of the future, Amy, how can people actually find out more about Fast Futures if, again, you know, they're thinking about it? And is it ever too late to actually apply? I mean, if people are listening to this and graduated a couple of years ago, or they're just literally going into university, should they be thinking about this? What's the sort of profile you would suggest?
So this is open to absolutely anybody who is aged 18 to 24 and has the right to work and live in the UK. And within that, I would say, no, it's never too late to sign up. You know, this is a great opportunity whether you are looking to take your very first step on the career ladder, or even if perhaps you've been working part-time and in a job that you don't want to be in forever. This is a good opportunity for, you know, those COVID career changes as well, people who just want to break out of the mold that they're currently in. So thinking about this current cohort, applications are now open. And open is first come, first serve. So they'll be open for a while, but don't dilly-dally. We do anticipate it will be popular. And the programme will start on the 20th of September. That's going to roll around, I think, pretty quickly. So the application is really straightforward in itself. Just share a few personal details, contact details, that kind of thing. And then there's about a 20-minute questionnaire based on your behaviours, personality traits, that kind of thing, which really just assess whether you're a good fit for the programme. We don't ask about educational achievement, personal background, anything like that. It's really just about where you are at now, your dynamism, your commitment to the programme. And then you get a really lovely feed from that questionnaire as well about your strengths, how you can maximise on those. So even before you started the programme, you've got some useful information that you can use to go forward.
Absolutely. Well, Grace, we wish you well as you move from the Southwest to the Midlands in your new transport career. Congratulations on that. I'm sure it will work splendidly. Just out of interest, Amy, will you be sort of following through with Grace as her career progresses? Will there be kind of check-in systems so it's not a case of, right, well, we've got you this job, now off you go, sort it out?
No, absolutely. We'd love to keep in touch with all of our alumni of the programme. And we have some ambassadors who will be going out there, like Grace, spreading the word. So absolutely, really, really keen to hear how everybody's career develops as they go forward.
Amy Caton, Programme Director at Fast Futures, and indeed Fast Futures mentee, our NHS mentee, Grace Whittaker. Huge thanks. Be well, be happy, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks.
And just a little postscript to the interview. If you are keen to find out more details about Fast Futures, or indeed wish to apply, or know people who wish to apply, you can go to the usual three W's, fastfutures.co.uk. So that's fastfutures.co.uk. You're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren Radio. And I believe it's time for another Zoomer.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
Well, it is a fact of nature that we can't all necessarily have six-packs or washboard stomachs or indeed immaculately coiffured hair like Boris Johnson. But no, we move on to the whole world of dating. And in fact, earlier this year, Bumble has announced that it actually had banned body shaming on its app after one in four UK adults said they had encountered it online on dating apps and on social media. And quite rightly, Bumble has now announced a zero tolerance policy to body shaming on its app. So is this something that's just unique to human beings? And is it problematic in terms of what we are as human beings, that we have this lack of confidence in our own shapes, etc.? Well, surely there are two fabulous individuals who are ideal to chat about this because they both co-host the Body Protest podcast. We're talking, of course, of the awesome Honey Ross. How are you, Honey?
I'm very good. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. And the equally awesome body image researcher at the Centre for Appearance Research, that's Nadia Craddock. How are you, Nadia?
Very well, thank you. Good to be here.
Excellent. Nadia, if we can come to you first. I mean, this whole notion of what we look like, how things are developed, what sort of images we work through. I mean, through the magic of Zoom, we can actually see each other, which is wonderful. And you both look fantastic and awesome. But from that point of view, what is it that kind of gets us so worked up about the fact of, oh, I can't possibly cope?
Well, the thing is, there is so much societal pressure to look a certain way. And I think there's a couple of things going on. We have these unrealistic appearance standards that are promoted through media, through advertising, that really tell us that we should look a certain way to be happy, to be desirable, to have a happy and fulfilled life. So we have those messages. There's also a lot of body shaming in society because of weight stigma and colorism and racism and ableism. All of these isms that are also that shame people for being who they are. So we have all of these factors in society, and these can be permeated in different ways, and messages can get reinforced from conversations with friends and family. But we live in a society that's very unforgiving when it comes to appearance.
I mean, Honey, from your own perspective, is this something which you just think, well, why can't we all just get along? I mean, again, you know, we all have sort of peccadilloes, queries, uncertainties, etc., and kind of feeding into that panic. Is it something which, you know, we need to constantly go back to that positive message to actually say, look, we are okay, we're human beings?
Completely. I think, you know, I really truly believe that however you need to show up right now is absolutely perfect. You know, as you are right now is good enough for me. That, you know, and I think everybody is so deserving of love. And I think it's a very complicated thing, though. You know, it's not as simple as saying, oh, why can't we all get on? Because like Nadia said, you know, we are bombarded with this immense pressure, which is why I think what Bumble's doing is so special by banning body shaming on their app and creating this safe space where people feel empowered to date and put themselves out there. Because you know what? Dating has always been daunting. It's only gotten more daunting with the pressures of the pandemic. I mean, their study shows 59% of people are feeling less confident about their appearance than they did pre-pandemic. So what we're seeing is the anxiety people are feeling is immense. But the fact is, we're also desperate for connection, and everybody is deserving of that connection. And the only way to get that is by putting yourself out there. So it's worth it to try and have that, oh, why can't we all get along? It's really worth it for what's on the other side.
Yeah, Nadia, is it literally just a case of we've always had these issues, but with the range of social media, mass media, and impacts from that point of view, that almost it can seem overwhelming and people just say, oh, the heck with it, enough, I can't cope?
Yeah, so it certainly can feel overwhelming, but there is also another way. And I think although social media can get a bad rap a lot of the time because in relation to these issues, it also offers us a huge opening to other types of appearance, other kinds of bodies, other kinds of stories. And we see people happy, joyful in ways that we haven't really been presented in mass media. So there is another way. And I think what's really important with the work that we do is that we don't have to feel bad about our bodies. We can change how we feel, and we can do that work, and what's particularly great is that we can do that work ourselves, but then also when we're doing that in partnership with companies who are trying to make the spaces that we are in, whether they are virtual spaces or in real life spaces in our environment around us, are trying to make those spaces safer. I do think that we can, it doesn't, we don't have to all live in this huge, angsty, body insecure way. There can be a different way, and we can push against it.
There's a line I've often used over the years, which suggests that we're not so much human beings on a spiritual journey, but spiritual beings on a human journey. It's an interesting line on that. But honey, were you surprised by the findings of the survey that suggested so many people had actually cancelled plans due to those two dreadful words, body anxiety?
I wish I could say I was surprised, but I wasn't, you know, because we are all products of the same society and we have seen what it's like out there. And I think the pressure is immense, and I understand why people are feeling daunted, especially after the year we've had and how people's bodies may have changed. And you know, I think people are particularly hard on themselves in times of transition when their bodies are in flux and maybe they don't recognize themselves. And I think that's why it's so important to double down on being kind to yourself. You know, I think especially as we know that the world is not necessarily always the kindest place, but it can start from home. You can be kind to yourself. You know, you can change those thought patterns. You have the power. You know, I've said this before, but you're not a passenger to your thoughts. So when a negative thought pops into your head, you do have the power to try and go, well, can we challenge that? Do we actually think I look ugly? Or is that just something that someone is profiting off of in an office somewhere, you know, because I've been told to feel that way? Mm-hmm.
Nadia, it's a fair point to actually say that the advertising industry, amongst others, makes a huge amount of its income from the point of view of preying on people's insecurities and concerns, etc. And what Honey's just said there about sort of ignoring your negative voice, etc., easier said than done, many people might say, but is it something we do need to at least acknowledge that needs to be one thing that, to start off with, don't be our own worst enemy?
Yeah, absolutely. There are many things that we can do. And yes, you may feel like you're fighting against the grain to begin with, but these things, like anything, with practice, it becomes easier. So I would always really encourage people, even if it feels unsettling at first, to keep chipping away, keep giving it a go, and you will stretch that muscle to be kinder to yourself. And there are other things that you can do. You can think about how you connect and feel at home in your body. So you can think more about what your body can do. You can try and enhance that mind-body connection through activities like yoga or dance or spending more time in nature, really focusing on all of the things your body can do outside of what it looks like. So movement, connecting, communication. We've been starved of communication for so long. Let's get back out there. And our bodies enable us to do that. Our bodies keep us alive. They allow us to do so much, and they're really incredible things. So just having that reframing can be really good, but it is knowing that this is something that, especially if you've been self-critical for decades, you're not going to switch overnight, but it is just constantly chipping away, having a go, because it's worth it. It's such a waste of time and energy and money for some people to try and make their body look and conform to these unrealistic appearance standards. So it's really worth it.
So honey, would you say that actually probably the best takeaway advice at this particular moment is before you can expect other people to love you, you need to love yourself?
I'm not sure how I necessarily feel about that, because I think everybody is so deserving of love, even if they haven't yet got to that place for themselves. And I think it can feel so daunting for people to hear that you're not going to find love until you love yourself, because I don't necessarily think that's true. I think it's very possible that if you don't love yourself and go out seeking for love and find it, you might not know what to do with that love. And I think that is something I more believe, but I think you can find love if you're not yet there with yourself.
For me, I always just look at the ultimate sort of act of love, which is surely Wall-E and Eva. I mean, you can't get better than that.
There's nothing in terms of body images.
That's it, really.
There's no love purer, truly, than those sweet robots. And they don't care how they look. They're robots.
Exactly.
We should all take a leaf out of their book.
Critical point. Well, Nadia, let's say we're not going to become robots in the near future. Some people might say we already are. Where would you recommend people should actually go to find out further information or details about the Bumble app and more?
Okay, so information about the Bumble app you can find on the App Store. Just download the app and all the information will be there. And then if you want to learn more about body image, how you can improve your body image, really recommend listening to our podcast, The Body Protest, which is available on all podcast apps.
I was going to mention that in terms of obviously it is a joint production. How long, honey, before we move from podcasts to virtual aspects of holograms of yourself, honey, and Nadia actually sort of popping up in a kind of 3D virtual reality routine? I just put that out there in terms of futurism, etc.
I mean, I hope any day now me and Nadia will be coming to a hologram location near you to spread the good word of positive body image.
Absolutely. Honey Ross, confidence activist, co-host, of course, of Body Protest podcast, and indeed Dr. Nadia Craddock, also co-host of the Body Protest podcast. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and be well and be happy.
Thank you so much.
88% of UK schoolgirls don't think their school is taking part in the national scheme to provide free period products, despite almost half of schools in the UK partaking. Yes, we're back on the topic of period poverty again. A year ago, of course, the government did introduce an objective of providing free period products for all learners in the UK. And yet, as we said, many people are still unaware of this factor. And we're delighted to be able to welcome two fine souls to talk about this very challenging topic to the programme today. First of all, Head of Healthcare Waste Strategy at PHS, that's Claire Noble. Hi, how are you, Claire?
Hi, good, thank you.
Excellent. And we've also got Specialist External Sex and Relationships Teacher Saskia Bujo. How are you, Saskia?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Claire, let's come to you first. I mean, this is actually, is it a failure to communicate? Is it a case of schools don't realise that this is available? Are people still embarrassed? Why are we still faced with this problem a year after, you know, we thought we were beginning to put an end to the whole concept of period poverty?
I don't think it's a failure. I think there's lots of things, as we all know, gone on in the last 12 to 15 months with the pandemic. So I think schools have been busy doing what they need to do to make sure their environments and the children were safe when in school regarding the pandemic. And I think now is a good time. We need to get the message out again. So the campaign was started, and we just need to drive it home more for the schools.
I mean, Saskia, from your own perspective, in terms of your experience as a teacher in external sex and relationships, are people still embarrassed about this when they shouldn't be? Is it a case of people feeling that they don't want to connect? And from both sides, really, both young girl, female learners and indeed schools as well.
Yes. I mean, the short answer is yes, it's still an issue. And I agree with Claire that the pandemic means that we really lost the momentum around the whole campaign with regard to the government pledging all the free provisions. But it's not just about the free provision. I think that what I'm witnessing in schools is that those that have signed up for the free provision aren't necessarily matching that with the positive messaging around periods. So it's so important to be able to give that education and ensure that those lessons on menstruation are happening as well as the provision of products. Mm. Accessibility is such an issue as well. Schools that have signed up doesn't mean that they're actually getting to the hands of young people. So that's another issue as well.
Claire, would you like to just share with us what exactly the National Period Product Scheme actually is for people who aren't aware of this issue and how it's sort of been very much set up to deal with period poverty?
So the scheme has been set up for schools to be able to register, and then they can order the product from the various websites or the actual scheme. And you can either have products in baskets, as an example, in toilets, or free vending machines are available. So then the students don't have to actually ask, go to reception and all of the maybe embarrassing things that the girls don't want to do. They can actually have free vending machines within the toilet area for the girls as well. So as Saskia said, once the scheme is set up, you then also need to be encouraging people to use it and get the product. So you can register, but then you've got to go the next step and make sure the product is within the school and there is a system that the girls can comfortably ask for what they need.
Now, we're coming to the end of another challenging year for education. The school holidays are approaching. Is there anything that's set up for learners over the summer holidays in terms of support?
I mean, over the pandemic, I know that some schools were actually sending the free period products home to young people, which is fantastic in terms of helping them manage their periods, but also in terms of the messaging, in terms of the school saying, you know, we're meeting your menstrual needs. So I hope that will continue over the summer. But it's definitely not something that all schools are having at the sort of forefront of their lists of to do. They've had a very challenging year, as we know. So I really hope that it's something all schools will deem to be high priority.
Claire, do you think that actually we are heading into a world which, you know, a year ago, of course, we kind of thought we were going there as well? Do you think that actually the this whole sense of embarrassment over what is a perfectly natural human function will actually be sort of put to one side, or is it a case of it's an uphill battle?
I think I don't want to say it's an uphill battle. I think there's lots of good stuff going on. I think the stigma is being reduced, but there's still a lot more we can all do. But I think our young students, boys and girls, will talk more freely about these challenges and these issues, and are encouraged to be more compassionate towards each other during these challenges. So I don't want to say it's an uphill struggle. I think we do have more to do, but I think it's a lot better from where we have been before.
9 in 10 girls, and over half of them actually, believe that the issue is not taken seriously enough by the government. Saskia, I mean, that's quite a damning line. I mean, I know you might say, well, who can take anything the current government says seriously? But, you know, quite apart from that, that actually is quite a really significant heads up and headline from the survey.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it depends on how the school is running their period programme. As we know, the new relationship and sex education curriculum is now statutory, but it's obviously been delayed in terms of its delivery through COVID. So the messaging hasn't really had a chance to get out there. So I would hope that in about a year's time, when we would sort of review these stats, or in 2 years' time, when hopefully we're back into the normal swing of things with pupils actually being in schools and receiving that education around menstruation, that the statistics will be a lot more positive. But I have to be honest and say that my first-hand experience is that there is still a lot of shame in schools and stigma in schools around menstruation. A lot of young people still unwilling to even say that they're on their monthly bleed and would really rather not come to school. So the provision is one thing, but it's crucial that we get the messaging out there as well. And that really is up to the attitudes around period positivity in schools.
Mm. And Claire, again, returning to the sort of findings, nearly 70% of students questioned think that providing free sanitary products in schools and colleges will, of course, tackle period poverty. So, you know, the message is clearly there. It's just a case of obviously putting it into action.
Yes, and the schools, we're trying to help the schools with the messaging, and we've written some lesson plans that have been released today for years 4 to 9. They can be found on our website, phs.co.uk/period equality, or you can follow us on Twitter at PHS Group. What we're trying to do there is help the teachers deliver that message and support them, not just with the scheme and the free products, but lesson plans for the children.
And Saskia, given that fundamentally this also rests at teachers because, you know, they're overworked, they're stressed, they've got all sorts of other issues from that point of view, if we've got any teachers who are listening to this either live or via podcast or so on, who say not another thing that's actually there, what advice would you actually provide those overstressed personal social development teachers and so on?
Well, I would signpost them towards the website that Claire has just mentioned. It's so important to use the lesson plans that have been designed by the experts. It's not about trying to wing it with these lessons. And also just to get some support from colleagues who are more confident delivering in this topic. If we're not comfortable talking about private parts or part of the bodily functions and talking about something that is a perfectly healthy process for young people to go through, if we're not comfortable talking about that, it will be challenging delivering it. So it's absolutely about accessing good teaching materials, but also finding the confidence to be able to do that.
And a reminder, of course, the web address is phs.co.uk/period equality, which hopefully will take you to the necessary details. Let's hope in a year's time we're not actually sort of sitting in this sort of environment saying, well, you know, are we getting there? We know, let's hope there is actually progress being made with respect to that. For the moment, though, Claire Noble, Head of Healthcare Waste Strategy at PHS, and Saskia Bujo, Specialist External Sex and Relationships Teacher, huge thanks and be well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our social purpose is to help people into a place fit to call home, and helping our members to green their homes in a fair and sustainable way is at the very core of that challenge today. Not my words, but the words of the Nationwide Building Society's Chief Strategy and Sustainability Officer, Claire Tracy, and we're delighted to welcome Claire to the programme today. Claire, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolute delight. Now, this ties in very much with raising the awareness vis-a-vis the environment, how homes deal with the environment. And in particular, I suppose, we're looking towards Tokyo. Yes, I know, after the European Championships. Is there any more sports to be had? There is, actually, the Tokyo Olympic Games, which are very much being dubbed the Green Games because of a carbon offset program. And Nationwide, obviously, very much behind this in terms of, obviously, your approach to sustainability in Britain as well.
Yeah, so with things like Tokyo, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, how green it is and how, you know, that people aren't flying in. So that's really great. And what we're doing at Nationwide is we're really trying to focus on the subject of green homes. So late last year, we launched a £1 billion fund to help our members make their homes more energy efficient. And, you know, what we're announcing today is the results of some research we've run to understand what makes people want to green their homes. And what we found is this really big awareness gap. You know, people want to be environmentally friendly. They're spending a lot of time thinking about cutting out plastic or doing things like, you know, not flying so much. But actually, when it comes to their homes, they don't really think about, well, you know, if I want to be green, I've got to have an energy efficient home. But actually, heating and running a home, residential homes, is like 15% of the UK's total carbon emissions. You know, and we need to tackle it if we're going to fight climate change. And there are a lot of properties out there which are drafty, which aren't possibly very well insulated, and they're basically leaking heat. So you've got like millions of UK households who are spending hundreds of pounds a year effectively heating the air like outside their house. And that's something that Nationwide is really wanting to tackle. So that's what the research we're talking about today has been about.
There's the old line that an English person's castle is their home, or their home is their castle, or vice versa, one of those two areas. why do you think that people are so reluctant to get involved with this, or they're so unaware, I think is possibly a better concept to use, about how much energy they're actually wasting?
Yeah, well, I think part of it is we do need to have a bit of a kind of public awareness piece around it. And, you know, one of the things we're doing is calling on the government to start really pushing the kind of public awareness around green and greening homes. But also one of the things I want to say is, you know, some people think, well, it's like, you know, making your home more energy efficient is a really big job. And there are things that you can do that, you know, will have a dramatic effect on energy efficiency. And there are a big job, you know, getting cavity wall insulation fitted, you know, putting in solar panels, putting in double glazing, replacing your gas boiler. You know, that's a big job and that's going to cost money. But there are also smaller things you can do, you know, having energy efficient light bulbs, maybe fitting some loft insulation, or even switching to a green energy provider, a green energy tariff. You know, that can save you money and it's not actually a really big job. So, you know, that's the sort of debate that we'd like to have. But you're right, people do worry about, well, okay, if I get builders in, you know, am I going to get ripped off, or, you know, what sort of changes will I need to make? And what we'd say is that there are some simple steps you can take, and actually some of this can really save you money at the same time. It's a complete win-win.
We quoted you at the start, obviously, in terms of the social purpose of a Nationwide and so on. I mean, that is really important in terms of a commitment. And as you said, a £1 billion loan fund available for borrowers is a significant step towards that side of things. I'm also interested in the fact that you've also joined the Net Zero Banking Alliance, the NZBA, not only to do with New Zealand, but the NZBA system. Do you think that actually this is something which is, it's almost like an inevitability, that actually the message of sustainability will work through, or are you still going to get some holdouts of, say, ridiculous, it's all part of the conspiracy theory to run the lives via the world, Great New World Order?
Well, I think there does seem to be a real groundswell of people saying, yeah, you know, we need to move to kind of net zero. We need to kind of cut carbon emissions. And for a financial institution like Nationwide, that's a big challenge, because we're not like a big bank. You know, we don't have big corporate clients that invest in fossil fuels where we can kind of take that down. you know, all our carbon emissions come from our mortgage book, you know, people with houses in the UK. And so that is the real area that we're trying to face into as a society, to say to people, well, look, you know, if we want to move the UK forward, you know, there are some really big steps that you need to take thinking about the kind of carbon you emit from your homes. But it's a massive opportunity because it'll help people save money, and it's got real public health benefits too, because people will be in warmer, better insulated, more comfortable homes.
Claire, from your own experience, have you sort of bought into the green agenda as a case of, well, I'll say this on behalf of Nationwide, but actually at home, I'm so inefficient, it's crazy.
No, I would say I'm on a journey. So I actually live in a really old house. And so that's a particular challenge. You know, there are lots of different challenges, and every house is going to have its own problem. My problem is I live in a 16th century house. So we've been doing a load of stuff like kind of fitting shutters and trying to put insulation in. But it's a challenge because we can't do things like put solar panels on the roof because our house is sort of listed. So we have to be really careful about what we can and can't do, but we're sort of really trying. And we're kind of in the process of investigating if we can replace our gas boiler with a heat pump, which is, you know, something that I'm learning about, like how to do that and what that takes. So, you know, I think the fact is everybody's going to be in a different situation. You know, you may not own your home, it may be up to your landlord, you may be in an old house, but we're all going to have to start thinking about these kind of things if we want to tackle climate change.
And of course, you mentioned the boiler situation. I know there's an awful lot of concern about the efficiency of the heat pumps and other areas, which is the topic of another conversation, I'm sure. Of course, if it's in the 16th, 17th century, if you went back in a time machine, you would have obviously had lots of nice coal fires, wood fires burning, all sorts of things would have worked through there. Servants would have worked. It's not going to happen, is it? Not in the 21st century. Where can people go to find out further information, Claire, about this particular link with Nationwide and indeed the strategy that you're putting together for sustainability?
So they can go to Nationwide website, you know, go on and look at Nationwide Green Homes. You know, if they happen to be a Nationwide mortgage holder, they can speak to their mortgage advisor or call the call centre. But, you know, even if you're not a Nationwide member, just start to Google, like, make my home greener, kind of do some investigation of this stuff, because there are lots of opportunities out there for people. And it's, you know, it's a great thing to do. Save you money, make a more comfortable house and tackle climate change.
And we mentioned about the Green Games, the Tokyo Olympics and so on and so forth. Will you be following the whole experience of Team GB, or is it a case of, no, I'm so emotionally exhausted after the Italian results, I cannot cope with any more football or indeed sporting failures?
Well, no, I'm excited about Tokyo because actually I was not able to watch the football. I watched a bit and then I had to keep coming in and out because I just wasn't dealing with the stress very well. So I'm thinking that the Olympics, I might actually get a chance to sit and watch the whole thing through. I'm really excited. I've got teenage kids and they're completely up for it.
Claire Tracy, Nationwide Building Society, a Chief Strategy and Sustainability Officer. Huge thanks, and enjoy the games and keep on sustaining.
Thanks so much. Bye.